Vanessa Tucker, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Vanessa, you work for Freedom House, an organization that ranks countries around the world based on their level of freedom. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to that in a minute in terms of the specifics of how you do that, why you do that. But why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the history of the organization, because it's very interesting, kind of, you know, its beginnings, where it came from.
Sure. So Freedom House was founded in 1941, and we've been bipartisan from the beginning. Our co-chairs were Eleanor Roosevelt and Wendell Willkie, who was the Republican nominee for president in 1940. And we were founded at a time when isolationism was really running high in the United States, and there were a lot of questions related to potential American involvement in World War II. And the goal of Freedom House was to build support for a sort of a pro-democracy movement here in this country and a more aggressive fight against the threat of Nazism. And that's actually where the origin of our name, Freedom House, was in opposition to Brown House, which was the headquarters of the Nazi Party in Germany. And the idea was that Freedom House was creating kind of an antidote or a counter message to what was coming out of Brown House and out of the Nazi Party.
So obviously the promotion of democracy is important in the work that you're doing. I mean, you want to measure freedom in order to make a statement about how democratic countries are based on that level of freedom, right?
So our flagship publication, Freedom in the World, measures political rights and civil liberties. And that's when we're talking about freedom, those are the two main components that we're talking about. And within political rights, we look at the electoral process, so both sort of what's on paper, the electoral, the code itself, and also in practice, what is the conduct of elections and how do the ideals that are set out in the legal framework, how do those actually look in practice? And we also look at political pluralism and participation, so political parties, the extent to which there's a real opposition vote in the political system, also the rights of marginalized groups. And we look at sort of accountability and transparency of the government, including corruption. Under civil liberties, we look at freedom of expression and belief, so media freedom, freedom of different religions to operate, private discussion among individuals, the extent to which they are able to talk about political differences and different beliefs. Associational and organizational rights, so NGOs, non-governmental organizations, civil society in general, unions, rule of law, the independence of the judiciary and the extent of rule of law on the ground, and finally, personal autonomy. So that looks at personal social freedoms, equality of opportunity, and the differences among different marginalized populations within a country.
So for each of these aspects of democracy, then, each of these points, you're looking at every country in the world and gathering data, presumably. Now, tell us a little bit about that, the data gathering process. Sure. This is a huge undertaking to do this. I mean, tell us about your organization in terms of how logistically you go about even gathering this data.
Right. So we have 209 countries and territories. That's essentially every country in the world and then some sub-territories. For example, Hong Kong. There's a significant enough difference between that territory and its home country that it merits, sort of a more its own analysis in order to better understand the conditions on the ground. Also, some disputed territories are included there. So we have a network of external analysts that work on a consultant basis, and these are people who either live in the country or have extensive experience there. They gather research over the course of the year. And then they come to us with a set of proposed scores on each of those issues that I just mentioned. And we have a discussion, a regional discussion of academic advisors, regional experts, methodological advisors within our organization. And we go through every single country in the world, what happened over the past year, and how the scores reflect those developments. So if there's been a major change, if there's been a coup, if there's been a successful, peaceful transition of power, then we reevaluate those scores so that they reflect that reality and then look at the entire set of data for the globe and get an idea of what some of the trends are over time. So we, you know, unfortunately, we've seen over the past 9 years a decline in freedoms, and that just means in our reading that each country, the number of countries who improved was fewer than the number of countries that declined overall.
So presumably each of these individuals that are gathering information in all of these countries have some sort of common framework that they're using so that you can compare, right, across countries, which may be very different in many different ways.
Right.
So the question then is like how difficult this must be to measure these rather subjective things in some ways. I mean, is transparency the same in one place as another as it is another? I mean, you have, I presume, you know, kind of a common rubric, but the things may really vary and that well, just there may be a lot of variables. So tell us a little bit about how you manage that difficulty.
Sure. So there is a common rubric. We have a score sheet that has the same questions and the same scoring system for each country and territory that we assess. And the big challenge here is using our expertise from conducting this analysis every year since 1972 to make comparisons. We know what a number looks like. You know, for example, if you score a 2 on media freedom, we know that in one context that might look like, you know, no journalists arrested, that there are strong protections for freedom of expression, et cetera. So when another country is it's suggested that that score is a 2, we try to compare it to other places so we know that a 2 means the same thing across the board. So we just go through each one of those scores and make sure that it's not only true for the country over time, but that the numbers that a 2 or a 4 or whatever the score may be looks the same in one region as it does in another.
So moving from kind of like how you go about doing this to the why. Okay, so so obviously looking at freedom around the world is very critical, but why quantify it in this way? Why why measure it in this way in order to compare? What are the implications of doing that?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of people ask us, these are subjective questions. Why would you use a quantitative scale? And I think that when you think about the global, these are such big questions, looking at the entire globe and looking at the huge sort of collection of issues that are encompassed in political rights and civil liberties, it's really helpful to break those down into smaller questions so that you can start to have real nuance to your understanding of how a country is doing. So we know, for example, that, you know, the U.S., for example, scores fairly well in our reading, but that doesn't mean that it's perfect. And so using this, all of these different questions helps us realize, well, there are areas, for example, related to demonstrations and freedom of assembly that in recent years have been problematic. The Occupy Wall Street movement, for example, there was a big pushback from the police. So that's one area where the score was decreased. Now, that helps you understand that in a country that overall is performing quite well, you start to see where the weaknesses and strengths are, and that's a good foundation for reforms and for identifying where real work needs to be done.
So do you see that governments are using your data and your, you know, in order to make their foreign policy, in order to address internal issues and problems? And if so, is that the case largely in democratic governments where they're maybe more likely to be responsive to these kinds of evaluations?
Sure. So we hear a lot from governments about our analysis. It's very rare that we get a government who says, oh, we think you've done a great job, because we're sort of in the business of criticizing. And so there's a lot of defensiveness. But particularly in the last few years, since the Millennium Challenge Corporation, which is an aid-giving organization within the U.S. government, they've started using our scores in addition to scores from a number of other organizations. They use that material in assessing which countries to give money to. We find that we hear more and more from governments who, I always say there are two camps. There are the governments who approach us and say, you know, we know that we have a lot of problems, but we have limited capacity in terms of resources. So where would you suggest that we start? And that's a great opportunity for a conversation when, in reality, they're trying to make genuine movement forward, but they don't. It's hard to know how and where to start on that. So our scoring system is a good opportunity to say, okay, well, you know, the work that you've been doing on elections is certainly paying off, but your press freedoms are really suffering, and that's another area where you might want to turn now that your elections are going quite well. We also hear from governments that I think don't tend to have a real, the ones on the lower end of the spectrum often tell us that we have our research all wrong, that we've misunderstood the situation in their country. But when we start to boil it down and say, well, you know, is this inaccurate? Is there a place here that you think we should issue a retraction? If so, what is it? I find that we kind of hear radio silence there, and they would just prefer that we kind of put a rosy picture overall, but don't really have the data to back that up.
But you do have, it sounds like, more than one audience. It's not just governments. It's people,
right,
non-governmental entities, mm-hmm, that are perhaps working in or with, you mentioned funding agencies or things like that, you know, mm-hmm, that you would have a non-governmental audience as well that's paying attention to these issues and trying to direct resources accordingly. But it's interesting that you know, some governments anyway are responsive, whether they're being defensive or whether they're saying, where can I help? Do you direct them in the direction of help? Do you say, well, if you need help in media, professionalizing your media and establishing better media freedom, do you provide them resources to where they can look, or are you just there to evaluate and then kind of leave it up to them?
Well, we provide them in-depth analysis on all of the background on how we got to the evaluation that we arrived at. So some of these, media freedom is a good example where there are so many subcomponents to having a free and active media. It's not just about not arresting or attacking journalists. It's also about having, a vibrant economic system that supports a vibrant media environment. And so that kind of thing, it's often just helpful to explain to them why we rated the country the way we did. We don't typically provide, direct help in fixing the situation, but we will talk about, these are some organizations that do work on that area. But we tend to be just within the research in our work at the publications.
Well, you mentioned earlier criticism, that this is mainly, it's taken by many to be critical of what you're doing. I mean, I suppose any sort of evaluation could be, mm-hmm, because there's always work to do. There's always more that can be done anywhere. But there are some cases where I imagine you're particularly critical, where there are those at the lower end of the spectrum that really don't score very high on freedom of any sort, political and other civil liberties. What is the kind of reaction that you get to them? Are you seeing some, you mentioned earlier also a decline in freedom around the world. I mean, are you seeing any kind of, trend? Are we really seeing that governments are becoming less responsive to this issue of freedom and political and civil liberties? Or are you, hoping to find it going the other direction? What's kind of the overall prognosis, I guess, of freedom?
Right. Well, I find that governments at the very negative end of the spectrum tend not to respond to us at all because they're already at a level where often access to information within the country is not very robust. And so people probably have not heard of our assessment. They're not able to access information about our organization or our assessment online. So there's no real threat within a country from the assessment that we've published. One thing, a trend that we've noted over the past few years is, there was a time probably, in the last decade or so where there was a real feeling that we've shifted from a time in which democracy and claiming to adhere to certain standards of democracy was sort of ubiquitous, that countries would say, well, we have our own kind of democracy, or we have our own model of political liberalism. It's not like others, but they would still use that language. And I think that that's less and less the case. We see more countries making kind of brazen movements. I think Russia's invasion of Crimea is a good example, where they no longer feel the need to adhere to certain, even just in their message, adhere to certain standards of democracy. So that's one challenge that we've noticed and that we've tried to call attention to, is that there's been a real erosion of public interest in what democracy means and why it continues to be an important cause. Egypt is a country that I do a lot of work on, and I think that that's a good example where at a certain point with crackdowns on protests, with arrests of journalists, they just sort of stopped caring and stopped really promoting democracy even in their message, which is a real problem.
Well, I hate to end on that note because that certainly opens up a whole different conversation, but certainly gives us something to think about going forward is the future of freedom. So Thank you very much, Vanessa, for being here with us today. We'll be following up on your work.
Thanks so much for having me.